This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hey, listeners of Missing More Amari, I'm Tim Polari, and I'm here with Lance Reinsterna.
Hey, listeners, how are you?
We are bringing you an episode from our Creators Commentary series that we're doing exclusively for Stitcher Premium. If you like what you hear, subscribe to Stitcher Premium at stitcherpremium.com and use code MMM for a free month. And right now we have 40 episodes of our Creators Commentary up there on the feed at Stitcher Premium, and that is why the corresponding episodes are pulled down off of Apple Podcasts.
And we're choosing this episode, episode 16. This was the episode that we went to Lincoln, New Hampshire, and we received some less than slightly veiled threats against our life.
And we have 40 more to do, so by the end of this project, we're going to have at least 80 commentary tracks on Stitcher Premium. So check it out there, stitcherpremium.com, and use code MMM. Thanks for listening. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Creator Commentary Tracks for Missing More Amari. I am Tim. Joined here today, as always, by Lancey Pants.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Lancey Grace is probably more appropriate.
The E stands for Ezekiel.
That's right. That's right.
Or Ebenezer during the holiday season.
Right. Lance E, capital E, period, Pants.
Yes. Pants.
I thought it was Esquire. I always thought.
No. It's Lance E. Pants Esquire, the third.
Okay. Because Esquire goes at the end. So, yeah, I don't know why I would have thought it was.
Well, it's good to be here.
Yeah.
Wormtown, Crawl Space Studios.
And I'm really excited about this episode, Lance. This is episode 16. This is really a turning point.
Yeah,
an absolute turning point for us during the run of this podcast.
Welcome back to the Missing More Amari podcast.
It was.
Lance.
A lot went into the decision to do what we did in this episode.
I know we've said it before that we had a crazy week, but seriously,
you're explaining it right here. It was because of that crazy week that we were up at Lincoln. And
sure. It's been nuts.
Shut up, God.
Honestly, feels like it's taken about a month.
So I do know that we were advised by Texas Crew. We told the Texas Crew production company about these threats, and we were like, you know, as kind of like a way, like, come on, guys, like, hurry up, let's get something going here.
Yeah, let's get the production going, and we needed to get people to the coordinates because we weren't able to do it. I remember being on a conference call with them. I was walking around the parking lot of the job that I worked at the time, and just, you know, walking around, just thinking like they're just not taking it seriously enough because they really didn't seem like they were.
No, and they definitely didn't. They were like, you know, I don't think you guys should broadcast this because it might encourage more of it.
That could have been part of their reason. Actually, it probably was part of their reason, but I think they wanted to save some drama for themselves.
That was definitely probably more of the reason.
Which is fine.
Yeah, yeah, they're TV producers. What do you want? You know, getting a threat is definitely something that they are going to want to cover, and they did, and it ended up still being a big part of the show. But I think we decided to do it. We did it, I think, was more for, like, this was about the same, I don't want to say our safety, but I think that is that is what came into the decision, went into the decision to do it. It was like, we could just pretend this never happened, but...
Yeah, you're saying the decision to even do this episode and release it.
Yeah, release and talk about these threats that we got. And I think it really came down to, you know, if we didn't talk about it, maybe this guy keeps sending us stuff that was creeping us out, or if we talk about it, you know, at least we can kind of expose what's happening behind the scenes.
I remember,
and maybe scare him in some way.
Yeah, I felt that it was acting more like a diffusing mechanism. Like if we came out and talked about it, then it would be so obvious if anything happened that it would be this person, or you know, talk about these threats, because if you don't, then the person will listen and think that they're getting away with it.
Right.
And not just that person in particular, anybody.
Yep.
So I felt like it was a good practice to go on and fight them with the only thing that we had to defuse the situation.
Mm-hmm. And this was also our first contact with the New Hampshire State Police cold case unit. We sent them some of these emails, and they were just like, if you feel threatened, go to your local police, and that's pretty much the response you'll get when you get a threat online, unfortunately.
Right. You're talking about
especially an anonymous one.
And the cold case unit.
Yeah, New Hampshire State Police cold case unit.
Yes.
What are they going to do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Years on the case. The physical stuff he has in his hands. I don't care what he says online to get a rise out of people. That's not even close to what we talked about when we were with him.
We had a great day. We went with John.
Stole your cap.
To the accident
site. Oh, my water bottle cap.
Yeah, filmed
sorry.
Some
gross.
Really interesting stuff there. We also met up with Tim Westman.
Tim Westman.
Oh, yeah.
Right. The very static.
The infamous interview with Tim Westman.
Yeah, this is really a loaded episode.
Yeah. It's only 45 minutes.
So she is really.
Yeah, we had a lot of witness. We hit a lot of things. I mean, the Tim Westman interview probably isn't more than 5 minutes. Later.
So we speak with Tim a little bit. We're gonna.
And most of this was recorded from up north in Lincoln at the Roadway Inn.
To set this clip up.
Yeah.
Is that after we drop John?
It is a riveting episode. It certainly is a turning point.
Yeah.
And if we were to divide the series into. I'm sorry, if we were to divide all the episodes
some
into series, this would probably be the end of series.
Season 1.
Season 1. Seasons, that's what I'm trying to say. God damn it. I'm all caught up in the story here. If we were to divide all of the episodes into seasons, this would be the end of season 1.
That's definitely, I definitely agree there. And again, I think we talked about this in the last episode, but this was the moment, or this was the end of our weekly run. Of Missing Moira Murray. We did 16 straight weeks of an episode, with an episode. And then we took, I think, a little bit of a break in between this and the next episode because it was a little too hot.
Wisely so. I think even if this didn't happen in Lincoln, we probably needed the break anyway.
Yeah, oh, I think that's definitely right.
Very curious. It was a picture of a heads-up penny from 1982.
Oh, here we go.
Here's where the threats start.
Disposable coffee lid. And the significance of that is just that it's Abraham Lincoln, and we were going to the city of Lincoln, New Hampshire.
Now, some people would be like, oh, you're reading
right.
New
and 1982
which we
was
were.
A year on the penny.
But it was intent. This wasn't an accidental picture of a penny. It,
right.
It was a picture of someone did this on purpose.
Murray,
they sent a picture of the penny
Murray
with
Doc, at James Renner,
with Maura's
you know,
birthday
was the year
on
that
it.
Maura Murray was born. So
on the
that
penny.
Was an accidental.
Was Maura born in 82 or 83?
At that point, we...
I think it was 83.
I have a feeling that someone may be monitoring our emails.
I think we got the we might have gotten the date wrong. But maybe the penny we just said it said 82.
Yeah.
But I think Maura was born in 83.
Talking about
and I'm not sure we got
she was born in 82.
She was.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy. And the timing of the emails that we got that really freaked us out were even more freaky. I guess
and that person had responded on Twitter to us and said, I didn't mean anything. Was it in Twitter that the person responded and said, I didn't mean anything by it? I just thought it was a interesting coincidence that I found a penny with Moore's birthday on it the day that you guys decided to go.
Yeah, that further confused us because we thought for sure this person was doing it to freak us out. The person runs a death pool, a celebrity death pool. You know, or at least had at one point, which is just kind of a weird and kind of a, I don't know if it's that creepy, but it's kind of a weird thing to do, kind of a morbid thing to do.
Yeah, it was a creepy thing to do based on the person's handle and what they were indicating in the first place. And then this is a song that came through email.
So Miles Wainwright started emailing us, and we kind of thought it was probably the same person. We still don't know 100% if it was. I think
have we said Miles Wainwright before? Is this the first time we've said Miles Wainwright?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Yeah, that was the person's name, Miles Wainwright.
I wrote back, great song. Cold?
We thought it was Cold and Holefield.
Yep. I called him, actually, on my way home from Lincoln that day and left him a message, and then he called me back, and I spoke to him later that night.
Yeah,
he said it wasn't him.
Another podcaster?
Yeah.
Somebody who we talked to.
What, you think it's him?
No. I mean, even if it was him, he wasn't going to say it.
Wavelength, like, as far as it was, you know, like, sense of humor and...
he's a big Catcher in the Rye fan.
Yeah.
As you can tell by his name.
And to be honest, when you had said that this was Cold, I really, like, it didn't strike me as Cold at all.
Right. The other thing about Cold is he is anonymous, so it makes you wonder why. And he posts in his blog a bunch of YouTube videos.
Not anonymous
videos,
anymore.
I assumed it was him.
Michael Dudik.
That's right. Yeah, he's on Twitter now.
So then this person wrote back, "You're barking up the wrong tree with your suspicions of Fred. He'd nothing wrong. Sorry, let me... get the grammatical errors correct. He'd nothing to do with it. He knows nothing." That's it. And this was on October 11th. And then I wrote back to him again.
I think what creeped us out is the person was speaking so Fred Murray like confident about what happened tomorrow.
And can't do that without talking about Fred. I don't believe Fred had
I'm trying to think of the right word that backs up what you're saying. They were speaking very confident about what happened to Mora.
Knowingly.
But even like the sense I got from reading the emails, it just they never specifically said, "Hey, I'm watching you," or "I'm aware of what you're doing and where you're at." But I just got a sense of them knowing specifics that I think only we thought we knew.
Well, when they say something like Fred isn't guilty, he knows nothing, you know, like it's saying just like that they're sure, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying Fred by any means. I'm just saying that was the tone. They said a lot of things. Miles wrote a lot of things about like how, you know, and then he started talking about a killing moon and it was dark that night and things like that. So I get what I'm saying is, we didn't necessarily know that this wasn't the killer, if there was a killer. You know what I mean? Some on Sunday and so much more on Monday. See, that's what I was talking about, what he just said.
And then he wrote back.
I was speaking more of like, 45 minutes later. Hold on.
Yeah, definitely a full moon that weekend, but not on that Monday.
And we're so very specific there. But I was speaking of more immediate specificity.
And then he wrote back again.
Like, I felt when we were reading it, that this person was in Lincoln. And it was just a sense that I had.
And that of Mora's, I'd suggest that you be mindful how you tread into this thing. There are reasons why no one has been able to crack this case. Mora's victimology is apparent, so spending too much time on her before her murder is kind of a waste of time. She was a victim of quote-unquote opportunity, and I'd ask that you respect Fred and her family, both of whom had nothing to do with this, and know she isn't alive. So be careful not to agonize them any more than they've already been.
Which is a interesting way to put it.
A good message, actually.
It sounds like a John Smith message.
I've just never heard anybody say it like that.
Shut up.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. It's pretty weird email, obviously. I wrote him back. So why don't you go to the cops then if you know what happened to Mora? Miles Wainwright, while we were with Wolfman.
Oh, I guess we
did
mention Miles Wainwright's name.
While we were
with John Smith. I have that email coming in at 12:26. That means we were with John Smith already.
We had just
gone to his house.
Yeah, no, we had like within a few minutes of that email coming through, one way or another, we had either just picked him up or we were just about to pick him up.
It could have given him time to hit send and then meet us on his driveway.
It could have, and that is why I'm saying it. Because we've talked about this, and a lot of people have messaged us and said it was probably John, because later, after we dropped John off, is when more emails came through. So I don't know. But that was the only one that came in that was close enough to either we were with him or not. You know, we were with him.
What did we do today, Lance? We went to the accident site. We went
First we went to his place, and he was waiting for us outside.
Am I drunk?
Was was standing there.
Yes,
we were waiting for it outside.
Yeah, all day.
Well, we had to.
We got pretty. We got. We tied one on that night.
We needed to take the old edge off.
Yeah, so this part was recorded from New Hampshire.
If anybody stops and they start talking to us, like, that's fine. There's a guy with a gun. Like, I feel totally
totally comfortable right now.
Yeah. So when we got out of the car at the crash site that day, we were like unpacking the camera from the trunk and whatnot. We heard a bunch of gunshots coming from the woods. Hunters, apparently.
Well, there's the firing range right down the street.
There's that, too. But I think it was coming from the woods straight ahead. But I'm not really sure. It sounded like it. Actually, I guess I wouldn't know. But
yeah, it's hard to place it when.
Yeah.
I mean, we live in an area that you don't commonly hear gunfire. So.
Yeah.
But we are in Worcester.
But my point is, it just kind of set the tone.
Yeah.
Like you get out of the car and you start hearing gunshots.
This than we do. People on the ground zero, basically, in this area.
So this is us in the car. Talking to John driving to the crash site.
And we start this podcast about this, and we're in this documentary. And, you know, obviously you guys, you don't know our intentions. You are probably not going to be receptive to an interview with us for what reason. And it's like, you know, when we were asking people for interviews and everything, I failed to realize that why would they do interviews with us? Why would they trust us?
I've been sitting at my house because that's pretty much what I do now. In the early days, I was on the road all the time. And like I say, you know, I have so many places that I've been, so many notes of every place that I've been, interviews that I've done. And now it got to the point where it was just like it was fruitless going out because there was nothing really to gain. You know, there was nobody to interview. There was no new places to go and look. So I started most of my research from doing a lot more research online, as well as, like you said before, kind of
transitioning to the armchair version of the citizen detective, right?
To say stuff. And then, like I said, in some instances, people gave themselves up. And
yeah, he didn't give a time frame on when that happened, right? He's just been, he said that he was, in the early days, he was out and about on the road a lot, and then it transitioned to him researching online. A very, very unhealthy thing that happened right there. I'd be interested to find out when that transition occurred and when he turned into, like, trolling. And did he realize he was trolling when he started trolling people and less investigating?
Now, when you say trolling, what do you mean?
Like what he was doing with us in the beginning. Just like these taunts here and there and innuendos and not specific requests to talk. It was mysterious one-liners here and there on Twitter. Yeah, cryptic.
No way that, you know, it happened. So, you know, that is the kind of stuff that I've been dealing with for the past 11 years, pretty much, because people come onto the scene pretty quick and
but
took off.
He does have a blog, and he did, I think, at this point. I think he started it shortly before we started all this, or maybe after. I'm not really sure, but
I never went out and
I think that he does bring some value, I think, with that. You know, like these kind of trollish comments, really, as you're saying, on Twitter or topics or Reddit or whatnot, are kind of valueless. But a blog on the case, where your information is all in one place, coordinated, you know, there's some value there.
He's never going to stop saying it, so, and I won't.
So that's John Smith and me and Lance in the car going over to the accident site.
You know what I would like to say about it is that this guy adapted from being a lace up the bootstraps. And
see,
let's go.
Now I feel totally different. This is the beauty of the creator commentary. I feel totally different about this because he's such a genuine guy when you meet him,
right?
But he's got this underlying reality of his personality, which is very vicious and petty. And it doesn't come out when you meet him. He just seems weathered and genuine.
So in old Lance was giving, or I guess,
I don't think he was online.
Past Lance, because now you're old Lance.
Right. There's a difference between being current Lance, old Lance, and past Lance.
Right. So
fucking damaged Lance now.
So past Lance was making the opposite point that current Lance was just making.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah, like you were saying that
like network based.
You're giving him credit for making the transition into an online forum.
And I was also providing him an excuse for being sort of beaten down and weathered. There was nothing more to do when he would go out on the road and
now he also
stomp through the woods and pick ticks off of his body and interview people. He just beat the pavement to the point where it was worn down and there was nothing left. So all he had left was this online presence and online investigation. That's what I was getting at back then.
Okay.
But in retrospect, all of these like weird things that, or not weird, but sort of suspect things that would come up that I think I dismissed in my mind back then, the fact that he didn't know about the dilapidated house on Old Peters Road.
Front bumper of the car.
He never saw it. Which was weird to me. But I remember thinking that, like, you've been here many times and you never walked down that road.
Yeah.
Never looked over to that house. Like, we found that by accident.
Right. Well, I mean, it's pretty natural if you're kind of doing boots on the ground investigating that you would walk up Old Peters Road.
Yeah. We're talking more. It's right there. It's
right there.
It's not hidden at all.
And again, we've said over and over that if Maura ran into the woods, it's almost, I would say, almost definite that she went up that road.
And almost definite that she would have gone into that house.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, I think if she wanted a place to hang out for a short period of time.
I don't think it was abandoned yet. Because...
Well, due to all the magazines. Papers and the magazines. Yeah, yeah.
There was a magazine that... They were years saved, I believe, of magazines, and it ended March 2004.
Tim West.
So they were at least there
mowing his lawn
at that point.
John Smith was outside.
Or somebody was there.
Yeah.
We were demonstrating, you know, we were shooting outside.
That is a bizarre house. Sometimes I just don't like thinking about it because it's so weird.
He broke that.
Bless you.
Late October. You might as well manicure your lawn.
Also, the fact that John never went to UMass just once. Just once in over a decade.
And I don't think he did. But
I wonder how long he hasn't had transportation. I don't know.
Faith Westman from going from her house. Or actually, I should say coming back from the weather barn.
I guess I just assumed forever.
What was she doing over there?
Well, when was he...
Because I was fucking around with the audio. Yeah.
When was he sort of diagnosed with that condition he has?
I don't recall.
She walked out of her house
to the weather barn.
Did she go inside the weather barn?
I think so. What's it, an antique shop or something like that? I'm pretty sure it's
So Faith walks right across the street.
There were a few cars in the lot.
Oh, yeah, and goes into the weather barn. This is when we were there.
Yeah, when we were there.
I tried to get over
right before we approached Tim Westman.
Actually, I kind of missed her. She walked right past. And really, you know, she knew I was there trying to kind of, you know, with holding the camera, walking towards her. And she scurried in, closed the door. I rang the doorbell. She did not answer it. Except at that point, her husband, Tim Westman, stopped his riding mower right in front of the door, and that's when me and John Smith started talking with Tim.
That was funny because I was really, really, really tangled up.
Oh, what an asshole.
Tangled
up.
I'm not even talking like metaphorically. I was really tangled up with the audio cables.
You are tangled.
And I saw you guys walk over, and I was really pissed. Because
this
I
actually is
have
kind of a funny story.
Plugged in and I had specifically
everything started
said,
happening before I had a chance to like get everything ready.
Myself, so that stuff minutes. Happens, yeah.
I mean, it was just an opportunity that couldn't be.
We couldn't wait, basically.
And
yeah.
His lawn, and
we missed the chance with Faith
by
not being there a few seconds
and this is what we have.
Before.
When sweet tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, they thought, why stop there? Why not create other exciting and unexpected combinations, like rainbows and ropes, or fruity and gummy, or chewy and more chewy? That's why they created fun treats like sweet tarts twisted rainbow ropes, gummies fruity splits, and chewy fusions. When you dare to combine, it's sure to blow your mind. Sweet tarts, dare to combine. Visit sweettartscandy.com to shop now.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Sergeant and Mr. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Bunk beds in a closet?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Yeah, Tim gives us a little bit, and we apologize, the audio isn't all that great. There's a lot of wind going on, so just bear with us. Again, like you said, it was a very spontaneous interview, let's so we were not prepared to mic. We didn't mic Tim up.
That we can pick up.
I understand. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I'm sorry to interrupt. How are you? My name's Tim.
Yeah, I was just looking at your blog, I think.
Oh, real? Oh, no, I... Oh, yes, yeah, we do the podcast, yeah. Yeah, we're trying to find out what happened to Maura. I know a lot of people have bugged you about it in the past and tried to find out themselves. And at this point, you know, it's 11 and a half years later. Who knows if it's ever going to happen. But, yeah, we're trying our hardest to find out what happened. Would you want to talk to us at all?
No, I've talked to too many people already.
Yeah.
I haven't got anything different to say.
Yeah.
Whatever you've heard. some of it isn't true.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of it isn't true. Yeah. Can I ask one question about what you and your wife saw that night? I know that her first report was that there was a person smoking in the passenger seat, a man. Do you remember that?
We saw a glow in the passenger seat. There was only ever one person.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay. Good. That clears. That helps us for sure clear up a lot. Cause...
The other thing I'll tell you is the ribbon's on the wrong tree.
We know that.
Oh, it's on the wrong tree?
That was the tree that we were told from the beginning that police told us that she hit, and we've often wondered why. Was her car further down, Tim?
Oh, yeah.
It was.
There was a group of three there. Just...
Oh, really? So the next three passed the blue ribbon.
Yeah, there's one, and then there's three together.
Yep.
She hit one of those.
She headed towards those.
She came around this corner, did a complete UV, and ran into the tree. The guy says he never hit anything. It's bullshit. It was a very loud noise.
Oh, really?
That car didn't hit the tree.
It
no, it didn't, Tim.
Well, weren't here.
What's that?
You
I might not here. Have
she
been here,
she did a complete U-turn. She smashed into the tree and ended up facing this way.
Well, she might have spun out on the corner, but accident and reconstruction know that she didn't hit the tree.
Time to leave, because I was here and you
were. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're not trying to
argue with you, sir, at all. Okay, I don't want to argue with you, sir, at all. I'm just saying the accident reconstructionist said that they didn't hit a tree. So
I don't want to argue with you, but here's my argument.
But here we go.
No snowbank.
What do you mean there was no snowbank? It was
a little bit of snow. The road was completely clear there.
But there was no snowbank on the side of the road?
There might have been, a foot. You can't hit a foot.
But that damage that snowbank would have caused that lower part of that car to be broken all to pieces, and it didn't do that. So... And that's why I'm putting in your mind the fact that accident reconstructionist people who looked at the car.
I don't care about them. They weren't here either.
No, but when somebody looks at the damage to a car and they can see, they know that it wasn't something that big that caused the damage. You see what I'm saying? That's my argument.
You can argue all you want. Were you here 10 years ago?
I was here 11 and a half years ago, sir.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I was here 11 and a half years ago.
From day one, I've been on this case.
Okay.
And I saw the car right after it hit the tree, after they said that it hit the tree, and from the day one.
Where was it?
It was at Lavoie's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I talked to...
All I can tell you is there was a scar on the tree, and it disappeared, and heard the noise. She actually...
She accelerated before she hit the tree. And that, you know, why would she accelerate?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Guess.
Did you hear other cars come by after that?
Sure.
She probably hopped in one of those, you think?
Anything's possible.
Yeah.
I suppose you've spoken to the school bus driver before he moved.
Yeah, I interviewed Butch twice. I talked to your wife face twice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, they put him through the ringer for another week.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in a case like this, I mean, everyone has to be looked at and asked questions when, especially he was a witness. So when you look at it that way, he was the last person, in theory, to see her other than your wife saying that she was still at the car and drove away. So that's something that has to be done. That's police work. So, you know, whether they put him through the ringer or not, I don't know. I'm not a cop, and I don't know what they did put him through, but I know that he moved away, whether that was because of all that they put him through or just the fact that he wanted to go someplace warmer.
He was here 5 years before he moved. That wasn't it.
Right. So, you know, again,
Butch was there another 5 years before he moved to Florida.
We're not here to argue with anybody. We're just trying to solve
just about the same time period that Rick Forsey moved out of his place.
Help the Murray family get some closure. And you know, again, like you said,
we don't
want anyone to be, you know, scrutinized.
Okay, so you've got your first problem because I'm telling you to hit the tree.
Well, and the only reason that I'm arguing with you about that is because of what
I understand what why a you're arguing.
Who,
I'm just saying.
I thought they weren't arguing.
Good for Tim Westman.
Yeah.
John's kind of bullying him here.
Yeah. Tim Westman's like,
was
I was here.
Marked?
Yeah.
Was damage from the car when the car hit it?
I just said there was a star on the
car. Oh, I didn't hear you. I thought you said star. Sorry. Yeah.
You sure?
Well, I thought there was a star on the tree.
Really thank you very much for talking to us.
You know, and we know you've been through a lot, and we're not here to harass you, sir.
Forgot about that.
Me too.
And I'm just
probably the stupidest thing I've ever said on the show.
What I knew on my side, so
very blonde moment there by Tim. No offense to blonde.
What are you doing?
Good luck.
Thank you.
Very good.
Back comment. Yeah.
You don't think there is ever gonna
ditzy
be a solution?
Moment.
No.
You think she probably got in the passing vehicle and something bad happened to her?
That's true. If she did get in a vehicle, they could have driven her to California. She could be in a, you know, in
oh,
a
she
ditch
could
in
be
California.
Alive. I'm not saying she's dead.
Or she could be dead. She could be alive, and that's true.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't know that.
Oh, I hope so.
Thank you very much, Mr. Westman.
Thank you.
We appreciate your help.
You've got to be pretty clever these days to disappear like that.
Yeah,
I know.
Absolutely.
It's not, you know, it's not easy like it used to be.
No.
So, yeah, that was interesting. I was taking some notes here.
What do you got for notes?
Well, he knew immediately. I forgot
so
if there was an introduction before the audio started recording, but did he know?
Speaking
he knew immediately who you were.
Lawn,
yeah, he said, yeah, I was looking at your blog and
then he said podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
That pretty clearly.
And then he said, I thought it was interesting that he said, yep, after you said you've been bugged a lot by this. And he was like, yep.
Completely spontaneous. So, again, apologize.
Then it's so funny to me that a lot of the people who we talk to about this will say, I'm not talking to anybody, whatever you heard, some isn't true. And then they continue to talk.
That is the thing.
They don't walk away.
Right.
For the most part.
They tell you that, like, you know, I don't know, when you get some kind of training about, you know, questioning people who don't really want to talk if they. Doesn't matter what they say, yes or no, if they stand there and keep talking, that's actually your answer.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't walk away.
Yeah, exactly. He said he didn't want to talk, and you said, well, can you just answer one question, and then he goes on.
Right.
But, okay, so there was a glow, and only ever one person.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep, only ever one person, and he said that he hit, that Mora hit the group of three trees, which is, if you're looking at the crash site, it's a little bit to the left of where the tree with the ribbon is.
It's more towards Forsier.
That's right.
It's more towards the
Butch's house. Yep.
But not by a lot.
No.
By like maybe 10 feet or so.
Something like that.
10, 15 feet. I'd even say maybe 20 feet if we're pushing it.
Yeah, and actually when looking at the crash, and I don't want to get into a whole thing, but in looking at the crash and the way she spun out, it was a little hard to believe that she actually hit those trees that were 10 or 20 feet further left because of the...
don't know
curve being, there. You know, back the other side.
It seemed like something.
Yeah, right.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. So I don't know.
Right in front of you, but
and he did say there was a scar, not star, on the trees.
On the tree. Okay.
I never saw that. We've talked about that with John. I think maybe even on the air. Like that there maybe still would be a scar on that tree.
Hard to tell.
So hard to tell.
Yeah. But also hard to tell, like, any trees on that area, like on that corner. There's probably plow trucks that go by, rocks kick up, hit trees, the plow could touch a tree and put a scar there. You know, it'd be hard to tell for us right now to look at a tree in all these years and say that that's the scar from Moore's car. You know what I mean?
They also cut down some of those trees. I'm not sure if they cut down the one
recently.
That she hit. Yeah, recently. Yeah.
But I was saying, even if we were, even back then, if we were to look at one of those trees and there was some scarring on it, it would have been like 11 years later, it would have been almost impossible to say that that's definitely from Moore's car.
Well, we ain't tree doctors.
We ain't tree doctors, nor are we accident reconstruction specialists who John Smith referenced looked at the car. That is, we know, false. We were told by the accident reconstruction specialist if he's talking about Guy Parody.
He's definitely talking about Guy Parody.
Never looked at the car.
Yeah.
So there's something that's brand new.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more prone to believe Tim Westman than Guy Parody at this point about the car hitting a tree. Now I'm kind of back into thinking it probably did hit a tree.
I wouldn't be surprised if it came around that corner, hit the snowbank, caused the damage on the front of the car. She overcorrected and hit the accelerator to maybe take the corner or something, or maybe she accidentally hit the gas instead of the brake, and she could. There's two scenarios that were going through my head when he was talking about her car accelerating. Perhaps she got hung up in the little snowbank on the side and then hit the accelerator to try to get out, get further hung up, and maybe that's when she hit one of the trees. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's many things that could have happened instead of John just saying, that didn't happen. She didn't accelerate. Like,
there's also a little ditch there, too, so I think that could have impacted the dent on the car in some way. I'm not sure how, but potentially it dipped down a little bit and then maybe hit the other side of that bank and then hit the tree. You know what I mean?
Yeah, all I know is that accidents happen really in a really weird way sometimes.
Yeah, and also one thing I don't think we've ever said is maybe what if the car spun more than just the 180 degrees? What if it spun, what is it, 500 degrees or
360?
360 and then another 180.
Like four, whatever, yeah.
Do this and, math. And that's why I tried to breeze past it, and then ended up that way. You know what I mean? Like, and maybe that's the reason why it was a little further down the road that I could see. I don't know.
I think what John is trying to push is that the accident didn't happen there, and she probably hit somebody else.
He's trying to put he's trying to push something more mysterious.
Right. And Tim is basically standing there saying, like, you weren't here. I'm just telling you what I know, and that's what I know. It is interesting to me, and I don't know if we've talked about this too much, but when he said that they put Butch through the ringer, it just occurred to me, how would he know that if he didn't talk to Butch? I wonder how much all those neighbors spoke. Butch, Rick, Tim, like, when did it get to the point where they all started talking about this?
Yeah,
saying, wow, they're putting me through the ringer here.
I think that is interesting now that you said how many of them are talking about this stuff. It's clear from the beginning of that interview with Tim Westman that they follow the case still. So they might be aware that Butch was put through the ringer from reading some stuff online. But I'm sure they probably talked to him, too. And I'm sure he's like, ugh. You know, and that's probably
lie detector test.
Yeah. Butch had to take two lie detector tests.
Yeah.
I don't think he necessarily meant the police put Butch through the ringer. I think he meant the people.
I think he meant the whole thing. Yeah, right.
The whole thing.
Butch has been put through the ringer. Yeah. Also, did John say that?
To say we will not be going on the hike tomorrow.
Oh, okay. I think I'm wasted here. Did not here, past Lant.
Yeah.
Did John actually see the car at LaVoy's? Because he said
that's what he said. I don't recall that.
How long was the car at LaVoy's before they took it out?
I don't know.
Yeah. They came through.
Oh, and don't forget about the penny that we got.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that is true. Now that I think about it, yeah.
There was a we were
because I don't even think he got involved until like a couple months later.
From someone named.
Yeah.
So the car probably wouldn't have been at LaVoy's.
Boneyard, who operates a death pool.
Right. I think their handle is Death Pool.
He said, I saw the car. And Tim said, where was the car?
Shot of a penny.
He goes, it was at Lavoie's. Interesting.
We've also heard someone speculate that he had a Freudian slip in there because he did say, he was like, I saw the car hit the tree after the accident. Or I saw the car right after it hit the tree.
Right after it hit the tree.
And there was a blogger out there who speculated that that was a Freudian slip and that John actually is the killer. And I think that was way too much drama for us to buy even for a second.
But today, I totally believe it. I'm just kidding.
No.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a misspeak.
So now we're back in the hotel room in Lincoln. I'm sorry, motel room in Lincoln.
Hammond. Yeah, he sent us the email, and then that happened.
And then after that, we had a great day with John Smith. And then once we got back, we had the email from Miles Wainwright.
Yeah.
Oh,
which read, Tommy Conrad was thinking about saying something before he was basically assassinated in front of his mother to send a message to everyone in the area to mind your own goddamn business.
Clearly not a threat.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You wrote back, is that a threat? He wrote back, oh, definitely not. I appreciate the work you guys are doing. Have you talked with Tommy's family?
Sort of a
diversion
there.
Don't even know who
there.
Tommy is.
Called him out on it.
Nope.
Being a threat.
And then you wrote that back to him, right?
Yep. Nope. Don't know who Tommy is. Who are you?
He said, I'm not trying to give you boys a hard time. I know your heart is in the right place.
See,
truly.
This is where it kind of sounds like John Smith.
You said,
well, it sounded like a threat. It would make us feel much better if we knew who you were. So, who are you?
Yeah, well, obviously he doesn't say. And then he goes on to saying, don't worry, I'm not a threat to you or anyone else. Trust me. Like, why would we trust you, buddy?
Right.
You just threatened us. Don't you have people that devoted years to this investigation? That Renner dude and that former Littleton cop? Ask them about Tom Conrad.
Also why it's striking me more like John Smith
now. Solve Tommy Conrad
by not saying his name there.
Yeah.
That Renner dude and that former Littleton cop. You mean the guy with the most memorable name?
Right. That didn't work with the Littleton police very long, like a couple of years.
Dude, if you know something, why don't you go to the cold case?
Yeah, that's interesting.
You want to talk to us so bad.
Calling you out right here, John Smith.
Are you Miles Wainwright?
No, it was you.
What freaked us out even more, actually, that night was that we received a couple of phone calls to our hotel rooms. Phone rang and nobody was there. We asked the front desk the next morning. They said that they didn't call. Maybe your friend did. Well, we didn't call each other. Someone called.
The phone calls came in probably at about, I didn't look at the time, but I think it was
and these
about
phone
6
calls
o'clock
came
in
too.
To our room. And
kind of creepy.
The phone rang maybe 3 or 4 times.
I said about 6 o'clock in the morning.
To answer
I think it was a little bit
stopped.
Earlier.
When we woke up in the morning,
it wasn't like totally light out.
From the man who was going to take us on the hunt.
Yeah, yeah. We still
and
can't figure out
that he had
this
received
phone
a phone
situation
call in the morning.
Because
and that was the first text message. That was the first communication.
We asked the people at the front desk,
morning.
Did someone call and ask to be put
phone
through?
Call and he answered,
and they said
and there
no.
was nobody on the other line. And he went down to the front desk.
This is
desk
the guide who we brought
asked
along.
If anybody had called him, and they said, no, maybe your friends in the in their room called you. And he texted me and asked me that. I said, no. And he said, I got this call. And I told him, no, we got a call too. So I don't know if we're like looking into it a little bit too much, but both of us got an anonymous phone call. Both rooms got an anonymous phone call the morning of the planned hike.
To me, that says that someone either knew what rooms we were in the Roadway Inn, or someone called every single room at the Roadway Inn to freak us out. I mean, unless I'm completely off base and this was just random again, like you said, you know, another coincidence.
But how do you measure randomness? you know, are they going to call
just
every
call
room
every
at that motel
phone like just hotel phone? Is there
out. And the other part
is there even a way to for an outside line to just dial straight to a room?
They have no idea what
I don't even think so.
Inside the rooms, and they just want to freak.
The call is coming from inside
the
hotel.
To our room and his room. As far as I know. We all know what we're talking about here. Like yeah. Both of our rooms had a weird phone call. And I didn't tell Rick about our phone call.
It's interesting
until he told me
to
about
think
his.
About. Maybe
so
there's an experiment
sort of
we can do some
us.
Morning
Man,
at like 5
is
o'clock.
Because
what I'm thinking is if you were
to
call
audience,
that motel and there was
this,
nobody at the front desk, let's say it was too early,
a mystery and you want to solve it,
maybe there's an automated system that says just dial the room
like
number
very real.
As
okay.
an extension.
And
yeah.
we cannot deliver to you in a way where it's
or if someone was there
entertainment purposes
maybe they just weren't well no it would have been the same person working when we all got up a few hours later
it's
most
an
likely
open investigation
I don't think
and
there's an overnight
us.
And it's real life to everybody yeah it's real life to us
there's
it's
usually
the
some
family.
Manager in the
really
back
John
of
Smith,
these motels
everybody.
Like there's always someone yeah, manning the ship you might have to ring a bell
at the roadway
yeah every roadside hotel
us we can't force anything out. And shit starts to get a little scary. And it might not be.
Right, well, the next time we do this.
When you're in your own home.
Maybe
and,
maybe we'll
you know,
do this experiment.
You go outside.
And then we'll report back. Maybe not the next episode because that might be in about 10 minutes.
Street,
but when you're maybe tomorrow or next week when we do some more episodes.
Sounds fun.
These tweets and these emails.
There's only 2.5 minutes left on this one. This one flew by. A lot going on in this one. Also, one thing that I don't think we've ever said, that we actually were hanging out that night at the crash site with some friends of John. One of them claims to be psychic. And so my only reason to bring this up is that it was that it maybe made like spooked us out a little bit more. I don't know. Anytime you're talking or dealing with someone who's psychic, talking about someone who died or some mystery like that, you just puts you in a mood where you're ready to be freaked out.
Like we do, everyone's
like
following
dusk at the crash site.
No, it was dark. Yeah, it was totally dark.
They all have to know that there's no end to this right now.
It was the only time I've been there at night, actually.
So we can't wrap things up nicely. This isn't
a
pre-scripted
series. Wrap it up.
Series.
Well, I guess
it's
what
still
I'm saying has some merit.
And we're learning and we're experiencing everything right along with everybody else.
All right, so thank you for listening to the Missing More Amari podcast. And we are postponing the East Boston meetup on November 7th. We are going to do it, just not there and not at that time or date. We are going to increase security and make you verify your identity before you get the address.
And it's really about making sure that everybody has a good time. Because what we really wanted to do was bring in the people who
does take on a completely
are passionate about the case.
This episode,
thoughtful,
yeah,
and we can have a good discussion. I just want to say that everything is kind of hot right now, and we want to do it when things aren't so hot.
And with that said, please follow us on Twitter at Missing More.
Wake up, Tim.
Instagram, we're also on Facebook. And with that said, follow us on Twitter.
We both sound beat.
Yeah.
We both sound like we just want to check out for a little bit.
Yeah, so we finished this episode on Halloween 2015 and uploaded it on that same day. I do remember listening to it that night, falling asleep with my headphones in my ears.
Email address that is very readily available.
Very happy with this episode.
Yeah, it's a great episode.
Any information about the whereabouts of Mora, go to your local authorities, go to the cold case unit. We honestly cannot do anything legally to help you.
Okay. Wow.
But if you want to send us something now, you know, you can trust us. I'm going to give our P.O. Box address. You can make it out to Crawl Space Media, 22 Front Street, F-O-R. I keep doing this.
FRONT. What did you say?
FOR.
Oh.
22 Front Street, Worcester, Massachusetts, PO Box 230.
do not put Wormtown instead of Worcester, because they'll just send that
they'll
to
send
the...
it right to the worm.
Okay. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with episode 17 soon.